Behavioral Health Integrations podcast strives to inspire the next generation of mental health and addiction specialists. Our aim is to continue to raise awareness and encourage collaboration in the mental health and addiction industry so that it will continue to thrive. There are numerous approaches to treating mental health and substance abuse issues. On this show, we take pleasure in showcasing the diversity of these approaches used to improve the lives of others. So without further ado, your host, Jacob Minnig.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Behavioral Health Integration episode. Today, I have two very special returning guests on my show, Matthew Sizedek and Ashley Rudolotis. On this very special episode, we'll be discussing the many aspects of masculinity and feminism. We'll be going over the pros and cons of each of them and how each of them can also have a negative impact on our society today, especially regarding the youth in our communities and cultures. We will also be discussing what the true definition of feminism and masculinity and what it is not. And in order to do this, we'll be going off of a YouTube video, CSI, and we will be giving our professional reactions to the video. I, for one, am truly excited to get this episode started. It's going to be very interesting, powerful. So without further ado, let's get started. Well, again, thank you, Ashley and Matt, for being on the show. I greatly appreciate it.
Really happy to be here.
It's wonderful to be here.
Again, I am so excited to start discussing like new current topics on feminism and masculinity. I know many people are waiting to hear what you all have to say, again, being awesome professionals in the field. And I know we're gonna have a great time throughout this reaction video and just our honest opinions, and as well as the Tom Brady article, which we will get into later. So without further ado, let's start with the reactions.
My biggest problem with it is that the definition of feminism has changed over the years. There's actually 4 to 5 waves of feminism. My mother was raised, she raised me kind of as like a second wave feminist, where it was about equality of opportunity for every person. It didn't really matter what your gender was. And that was basically it. It was never like talking down to men. It never was about making men. Because I used to ask it like as a question, well, as a kid, does that mean men are bad? Does it mean women are better? And she said, no. It's about equality of opportunity for these people.
First wave feminism was the we should get to vote, right? We should have right. And second wave feminism was that no more firm, open palm slaps on the behind from men in the workplace kind of stuff.
Like essentially.
Like equality in the workplace. You 1950s era smoking, guys smoking like, come here, babe. That stuff's out.
The sexual revolution. I think
being
birth
able
control.
To get credit cards and bank accounts, things like that in the 70s.
So they mentioned about like the 4th or 5th wave. So are we in the 5th wave of feminism now? Is that what they're trying to say?
So talk about, are we in the 3rd wave? Are we in a 4th wave or sort of a post-structural feminism period? It's certainly important to know the history, right, of these different waves of feminism so that you can place yourself alongside what we currently are using that term to mean. They talked about that first wave, which is really focused on women in the public sphere, the right to vote, the right to own property, the right to an education in university. We then went to the second wave, which is oftentimes what you think of when you think of the Women's Lib movement. It's the time of Gloria Steinem when she was first coming out in the Equal Pay Act. That third wave came about in the 1990s, where it was looking at sexual harassment in the workplace. This is when the Anita Hill trial, for example, occurred. And it's an idea of some women rejecting the term feminism, because it had been associated with that, in the video, he says, does that mean men are bad? All men are bad, right? So there was this movement to how are we going to define feminism in a different way? We're now in this point where, whether we call it the first wave, the post-structural feminist period, where a lot of global feminism is being discussed and the idea of intersectionality, where it's not purely about men versus women. And we're getting rid of more of those dichotomies. We're looking at social media fueled activism in this way. So that's the idea of the Me Too movement. Focus on accountability And not just an individual man's accountability, but also that systemic accountability. So I think that, you know, that the future, there are many ideas about what's going to happen, but that's about where we're positioned right now.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. I forgot the host name there with the long hair who was talking about, you know, second wave feminism, and seemed to imply that, like, that was fine, that was okay, but, like, now it's morphed into something horrible. And it's kind of an interesting pattern. It seems like men in general are not okay with whatever the dominant ideas are related to feminism during that time period. So, like, he was okay with, like, feminism back in, like, the 60s or 70s, the feminism of his mother. His dad, I bet, or his grandfather was probably saying, well, women should have the right to vote. And so he was probably okay with, you know, first wave feminism. So it is just interesting that the kind of pattern that we're seeing of men being uncomfortable with women gaining power and patriarchy being challenged. Mm-hmm. And so each kind of step in which patriarchy is challenged or disassembled in some way, men resist and say, well, why it should just be like it was before.
Okay, excellent. We'll go a little bit longer for this part.
That's fascinating, though. Tell me about that.
Well, it used to be that women used to have a harder time with that kind of thing, you know, being able to get mortgages and bank accounts and things. So, you know, when, like, the Equal Rights Act and everything was able to help us with that.
Well, so, but do you know why that was? Was it like men at banks were like, babe, you think I'm giving you a loan? Never going to happen. Yeah, get out of here.
I think
that was the 20s, though, by the way. In the 70s, they were hippies, right?
Yeah, I think that it was, you know, just previously not illegal to discriminate against somebody mm-hmm. because of their sex. And so, you know, maybe for whatever reason, banks just said, you know, well, maybe as a woman, you're going to have a baby and not mm-hmm. pay your loan back or whatever it was. For whatever reason, they just didn't tend to extend credit to women.
I think, you know, it probably was. The woman would go in to get a credit card and they would say, and is your...
Which I didn't know that was true. And I think this is pretty cool because I feel like I'm learning so much about this. I had no idea women weren't allowed to have credit and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Or own property or many of the things that you know, may take for granted have had to be earned over the past decades.
And again, you'll see that, like, over time, like, guys are often maybe raised by... raised by their mothers, or they just, you know, the culture begins to shift. They you know, become so obvious. Like, of course women should have that opportunity. Like, it would be ridiculous mm-hmm. not to. But now some of the changes that that women are understandably demanding, men feel uncomfortable and they're like, nope, that's mm-hmm. too far. And it's just a continual cycle of that, wave after wave, I think.
All right, good. Yeah, because again, it doesn't seem like that long ago historically, you know, the 60s and 70s, that something like that could actually happen. So it's very interesting.
Her husband okay with this? And when they were like, my husband doesn't matter, they'd say, well, he pays the bills, doesn't he? So, you mm-hmm. know, before women were as prominent in the workplace or in higher positions, they probably just said, you have lower credit just inherently by not doing these jobs.
Mm. Sure, could be.
Looking up. Well, this is the kind of feminism that most people are like, yeah, that's cool. You know, like, you shouldn't discriminate on these, like, it should be your job. It should be your actual credit, not, you know, you got boobs, you can't have a credit card. That seems like arbitrary.
The but Equal Pay Act, that's from 1963, signed by mm-hmm. Kennedy. I haven't looked too deeply into how it's read, but the Equal Pay Act, it's a labor law, prohibits gender-based wage discrimination.
I feel like that was made redundant by the 1964 Civil Rights Act.
Could have been, maybe yeah. a precursor to that.
Yeah. So now feminism, you know, probably the reason young men don't like it is that modern feminism is what mm-hmm. a catch-all term for basically all sorts of weird bigotry, discrimination, rage, mm-hmm. even violence.
I think mm-hmm. even from the get-go, though, when there were arguments to be made that women were being treated unfairly in certain respects, the feminist movement was still mostly pushing for the, so to speak, privileges men had rather than the responsibilities even at that time. So, for example, women couldn't vote. They also couldn't be drafted. Part of why many women didn't want the mm-hmm. right to vote at that time is because they thought mm-hmm. it was going to come along with a duty to be drafted, which feminists at that time did not argue for while they were arguing for the vote.
Now, actually, is this the one where you kind of had a disagreement on?
I usually have disagreement on situations where we're using any sort of extreme or really small group to pose an argument like this. And mm-hmm. so to bring that up in this context, I wonder just the utility of it, as opposed to looking at, you know, why is it that women wanted to, you know, participate in their democracy?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree that it's the same kind of pattern where it's let's find an extreme point and then just try to undermine an argument. Like, I don't see, you know, large organizations or say like, you know, divisions of the, you know, like the psychology of women division in the American Psychological Association or other kinds of organizations coming out with like hatred of men. Mm-hmm. And that's the dominant discourse. I think they hate patriarchy. I think they hate like the institutional like sexism and racism. I don't hear them saying, you know, I hate me or your dad or the other person down the street or men in general. So it's unfortunate. Like, I think it really just misses the mark of like the reality of it's a straw man argument. Like, it's not actually, I think, legitimate what he's doing, but.
I think they love hooking people because like in our context like this, they find like maybe 10 to 15% of truth, but they again take it to the extreme to maybe hook people in or get some entertainment because this is entertaining. Again, always going to the extreme of certain things and again, getting the attention of others. But that's my two cents on it as well.
And how we're getting attention, right? That matters. And there are people who understand that what they say can be powerful and can impact how other people are going to hear it.
Yeah, it's like simplistic arguments that lack really nuance. And so it's unfortunate.
So you're saying women should be drafted?
Well, no, my point is that I think part of the issue is even from the beginning when we're discussing legitimate issues, feminists were more or less, they were saying men and women are equal and should be treated equally in every respect. But then they would conveniently ignore the responsibilities men had, which women didn't, and not pursue equality there.
Yeah, with rights come responsibilities.
Can I jump in there though?
Yes.
There are many things that men are like kind of responsibilities men have that are unhealthy, that are like really harmful to men. And so it makes sense that women didn't say, "Yeah, let's go off to war and die," or you know, "Let's embrace maybe some of the other aspects of." You know, of masculinity or maybe, you know, roles that men have. A lot of women, you know, choose that they don't want to work 60 hours a week or whatever. And, you know, and so then there's just kind of this, I think it's perfectly legitimate for feminists to reject unhealthy aspects of like patriarchy and the consequences of it and not want to be a part of that and say we need to be equal in that sense because a lot of it's messed up and harmful.
Ashley?
The issue on both sides, I know that we're going to talk about toxic masculinity and toxic femininity as well, but, you know, the real issue that I see is the inflexibility, both for men and women and people who are non-binary. And whenever we're saying, you know, this is what you need to look like, this is what you need to do, even if it's harmful to your mental health, that's the problem. And really, that's a big part of feminism now. And different from what is what we heard in that podcast, it's not about you know, replacing one with the other. It's how can we do this in a different way that's benefiting more people?
Yeah, and I just kind of want to add a little topic, but I don't want to get too sidetracked. Like, again, when we talk about particular roles for men and women, I know there's a lot of similar videos like this where classic debate of like salaries, should a man make more than a woman or should a husband make more money than his wife and how it could be very emasculating if she does. And again, similar videos like this, they take it to the extreme and they talk about like certain like couples where they actually got divorced because again, the man just didn't feel like a man because his wife made a lot more money. Or if he chose to be a stay at home dad, the wife would go off and work and eventually divorce the father.
Yeah, I mean, it's really sad. It's shown the limitations that men experience from masculinity. And that they have the internal strain that they feel if they don't meet some kind of idealized expectation. So it's really unfortunate because it's added stress and it really, whatever the wage that man earns, like, you know, it's unfortunate that he then would feel bad about it and then may then resent, you know, his wife or something. That's really, I think, the downside of like these dominant masculine norms in our society.
Well, in society, like, aren't we taught that like a man is supposed to be the breadwinner, the provider? And if we can't do that, what are we then? because the woman takes care of the kids, they have the baby. And again, I'm just going off of what other videos like say about this. So like, what good is the man in that situation? But again, I feel like they ignore so many other human elements that a man can obviously provide a woman, his family, so many other things. So,
you know, and then I see them clinically in my practice because, mm-hmm. you know, they have put so much value on their career mm-hmm. and the primacy of work, that when something happens with work, they lose their job or they're no longer happy with it or something like that. It is completely devastating because that is their identity. That's where they like really have invested so much. They didn't invest maybe as much in their parenting or in, you know, their leisure, mm-hmm. their hobbies, their other relationships, you know, whatever other kinds of areas that they might value, because it just got so focused on work. And so it leaves them really vulnerable. And then I end up seeing them in my practice. And so it's helping them to let go of those dominant norms and really focus on what do you really value? Not what society says you as a man should value, but what do you really value?
Mm-hmm. And as a, you know, counterpart, and seeing a lot of women who are achieving and who have high stress or high pressure jobs, some of them also have partners and some of them also have children, and they are struggling with the stress and anxiety related to the narrative of women should fill in the blank, should be home taking care of the kids, should look a particular way, should engage in a particular way at work, should be the one to step back from their career when there are kids in the family. So I think as this idea of what men and women working looks like, as that continues to expand, this conversation about the masculinity and femininity is going to continue to be key.
Absolutely.
And also, Ashley, I know we got into this, Matt, I'm not sure if we got into this, but I know a big topic was like the birth of your child. And a lot of couples and a lot of marriages, like a decision needs to be made of who's going to go to work and who's not going to go to work, right? And I can just imagine a lot of stress being put in that situation where it's just like, who gives up their job to take care of their child? And normally in the past, it's always been like the woman.
Yeah. I mean, it's good now that like it is a discussion and it is a hard discussion. Like that is a step forward. It's unfortunate that part of what makes the discussion hard are these larger societal and cultural like norms or messages mm-hmm. that men and women receive. And it's, I think, harmful both to like women and men in that situation. But, you know, what's great is that we do see a lot of men decide to stay home. We see a lot of women decide to stay home and really like pursue what their values are rather than kind of letting go of some of those norms. So like I see positive momentum there. But it takes a lot of self-reflection and a lot of like support from probably their social network and stuff to be able to move beyond those cultural norms.
Mm-hmm. And for both partners to be able to have the conversation, you're privileged to have the choice to have these conversations, right? I mean, that does come with some privilege. But when it is a choice for a man or a woman to stay home, and that's a choice within, you know, their partnership, is very different than saying, I'm going to do this because of a traditional gender role. And so if as a woman, I choose, you know, to stay home after I have a child, and again, that's my choice, we see that women's mental health is very different in those situations versus it is my role to stay home and have my partner go back to work.
Yeah, I mean, I have an extreme amount of empathy for both parties. Again, I'm single, I'm not married, I don't know what it's like, but I know you two have been through it and everything, where it's just, it's a tough situation because either the man or the woman, they're working 5-6 days a week and the other spouse is again at home all the time taking care of their child. I can just imagine like a resentment at some point on both sides depending on the situation, where the one staying at home is like, hey, I never get to go out, I never get to do this anymore. And then the other one, again, just a hypothetical example is like, well, do you think I like working 5-6 days a week? No, I don't. But this is just something we have to do to, again, be parents and take care of our child.
Mm-hmm. Like Ashley was saying, when people are forced into those roles, like that's where I think the more intense resentment is going to come from. And, you know, if guys are receiving, you know, are kind of like internalizing these messages that they have to be the breadwinner and make work, you know, primary. And then that's compelling them to work those 5-6 days a week when really, you know, maybe they actually do value their relationship with their children and they would like to work less. So they would like to be the person at home. Like that is, I think, a real tragedy. I think there's momentum, again, a movement societally where we're seeing a lot of that shift. But a course like that is, there are all sorts of, like Ashley referred to, class and race and things like that, intersections there that can be also fighting against individuals being able to have either that choice or or different pressures.
And it makes me think of, Matt, the article that you had brought up about Tom Brady, and I can let you know, you describe it, but as you talk about it, just seeing there can be an in-between, right, where male or a female can be in a more traditional role and yet take on some of those characteristics that are less traditional. And so as we talk about that article, you know, the idea that you can have a masculine prototype of a male still be able to express his love in an emotional way for his kids.
The last part I want to get to this video, and it's about the negative things that, again, extreme feminism is like doing to the boys that are growing up right now. So I'll play the video and we'll react off of it shortly this year.
What's our on modern feminism?
Yeah, I mean, that's such a loaded issue, right? I mean, I think, Tim, that probably I kind of go with you in the sense that I'm obviously for equal rights for everybody. But I think a lot of women actually kind of want the right to be more traditional, the right to be able to be respected as a woman, to be able to recognize that homemaking and housewifery and raising babies, that those things actually really matter. And, you know, girls getting kind of pushed into this stuff under the guise of girl power is sometimes not quite so empowering. Also, as a boy mom myself, meaning I'm a mom to a son, I think also some of this, you know, girl power stuff has actually gone a little bit too far, to the point where it's hurting boys, which is actually also hurting girls, you know, to the point where girls don't want to date weak men. Mm-hmm. But that's unfortunately what some of this like over the top girl power stuff seems to be doing.
You say it hurts boys. Like, what's an example of that that you've seen?
Well, I mean, so if we are praising and helping girls to the point where, for example, girls are outpacing boys when it comes to college graduation or graduate school, girls are actually also paid more than boys now on average upon graduation from college. So, I mean, these are just a few examples, but obviously also boy suicide rate is much higher and other types of problems. And so when we're, you know, just still, for whatever reason, still focusing on, you know, more federal dollars to help girls in school, when in fact it's boys who have a literacy crisis. So anyway, all of the focus on girls, I think, is kind of a little bit superfluous at this point.
Well, this sounds like really good news for young Chad.
I guess, I mean, I have a lot of reactions, and Ashley, I can tell you're holding back. So I don't know if you want to go first or I go first. I think we're both like chomping at the bit here.
About, yeah, about the boys and ADHD or how, I mean, I'll just let you all take it over. So.
Well, this is a ridiculous argument. What the hell does feminism have to do with holding like men back, or feminism had to do with like men's boys not advancing in school? Like and maybe she just misspoke, and I, you know, have respect for her, and it might have just been like her connecting two ideas that she didn't mean to connect, because I don't see how feminism leads to boys doing worse in school. You know, and I don't see why that leads to lower graduation rates. She's talking about federal dollars and stuff. Who's in power in the government? All men. Like, I mean, it's not like women are saying, no, don't, you know, sorry, not all men, but like dominated by men. I mean, gladly changing, but they're not putting dollars into this. It's not women saying, no, we need to, you know, stop this. I can go back to, I guess, some of the roots of it or whatever, which I can maybe talk about later, about why men would not care about men not doing well. So, but yeah, Ashley, sorry. I'm all worked up. That's a weird argument.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, all of the things that were said as she was talking, that break each one of those down, we could have an entire podcast about, you know, about many of those. What can happen when you throw so many arguments in is that people start to, right, they're going to believe that they're all true. When yeah, there's evidence out there that more girls are now graduating for undergrad degrees. And certainly, and we've known for a long time, that males are more likely to complete suicide. And so all the, you know, there are lots of concerning things that happen to and versus women, but also it's typical that actually men are earning more, especially if you look at 1 year out after college graduation than women, and they're continuing to then go into more leadership positions. There's still discrepancies there. And so, you know, but again, you can throw all of this into the soup pot and get mixed up, but these are all unique ideas worthy of discussion. I mean, one thing that is really misunderstood is just this idea of feminism is about male bashing, male hating, you know, women trying to rule everything. And that is not the overall, because we're not talking about extremes, right? We're just talking about what's feminine mean right now. And there's this woman, Judith Butler, who does a lot of research on current feminism. And it's the idea of feminism is just treating people with dignity and respect, regardless of gender orientation, and to pave the way for equality in that. So we were sitting around, we had more time, a lot more to say on what she said, but there is definitely a misunderstanding of what the larger wave of feminism is right now.
And just like an example of like how I think this, like the argument is flawed, like Ashley was saying, is that one reason why we see higher like college graduation rates for women too, is like a lot of men leave early to go to like trade schools or go into college because they go to trade schools as well. So there's a lot of reasons that you have to actually look at the data to see what's going on. But of course, like there is very clear stuff, like men are dying by suicide at much higher rates, like boys are diagnosed with more ADHD. Mm-hmm. Men are more likely to be in prison, more likely to have, you know, substance use disorders, all these kinds of things. So like men are struggling, but men are struggling to be vulnerable and acknowledge that they're struggling and get the help that they need. And that comes out even at the macro level when it comes to allocating resources to, you know, men's mental health or, you know, educating boys or helping, you know, boys who are struggling. Mm-hmm. There's resistance to doing anything that makes men look weak or vulnerable or so.
And that, I mean, it's where a discussion of toxic masculinity and where that comes from is so important, where it's not just a message of feminism, but more so what are these expectations for our men and our boys? Where are they coming from and what's problematic in those?
So what she said, do you have that fear towards like or worry regarding your sons? Because again, I felt like it was a good thing because like you both have sons and maybe there's some relatability, or are your worries for the future generation of boys different of what she just said?
I mean, I'm optimistic because, like, I think, you know, our sons are in many ways being raised with some different reinforcement or, different cultural norms than I think even I was raised with. So I have a lot more optimism that my son would be more likely to, you know, cry if he's sad or reach out for help or support, or if he's gay, to come out more openly. Mm-hmm. Like, I just think, like, there's been a lot of positive shifts. I think he's less likely to be sexist and racist probably than prior generations. So there's a long ways to go, but I don't think that like feminism or things like that would have any kind of negative effect on him. It's actually going to have really positive effects on him because he's going to hopefully be a healthier person, able to like experience his emotions and hopefully pursue like a lot of his passions and interests, regardless of like masculine norms, because we really have to thank feminism for deconstructing gender and allowing people to be kind of who they are rather than just trying to, you know, mirror cultural norms about gender. So.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have some control and at least certainly we have influence over the messages that our sons hear, what we talk about at home. And there's this idea of integrated threat theory. And what it's looking at is this, you know, in-group versus out-group. What group do I belong to? And if you don't belong to mine, you're in an out-group. And if we think that person that's not me, whether it's that other gender, that their sex, that they are a threat to me. They're going to be a threat to, you know, my resources, my job, my standing, whatever. They're going to be a threat to my beliefs or just my social status. When those threats are really prominent and a boy or a man highly identifies with a stereotypical masculine image, we know that those two things together are not a good pairing. Because if you're really impacted and clinging on to this idea of toxic masculinity, and you think that a woman is going to be threatening to you, you're less likely to support things like the Me Too movement, the, you know, just feminism in general. And so if we can early on start to talk to our boys about what does it mean to be a boy versus it has to look like this, there's going to be really positive repercussions down the road where it's not as much in-group, out-group. It's just we're looking at this as, to sound, we're all in this together, but sort of we're all in this boat. So what can we do to keep the boat afloat?
Now, again, I think this is a great time to get into the Tom Brady article. Thank you for being patient, Matt, about that. I know, it's a great article. No, it's a great article. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, what I got out of it was just how affectionate Tom is with his son and how, again, it is perceived. And again, I'll let you take the lead on this one, Matt, too.
It was just really beautiful. Like there's a kind of a, I guess I would say a picture of a son that is not particularly gendered in some way, you know, like he's just looking kind of like happy and thoughtful. It's not like a picture of his son, you know, getting, you know, kicking the field goal or doing these other kinds of things that many people might feel the pressure to focus on that aspects of their son of like, okay, they're the top achiever at this, or they're, you know, great in sports. And so that's the picture that they show for their son's birthday. But it was a very kind of gentle photo and incredibly warm, loving statement that didn't like value his son based off of his achievements. And I think it's really positive, healthy. I was just, you know, wowed by it. And it's the way forward, I feel like. And it's great to see men be more flexible around things and not be quite as limited by gender norms.
Matt, can I just say that I absolutely love what you just said, because that was some of the issues in my childhood. Is my like love was really based on a lot of like accomplishments, doing well in sports, where one thing I'm trying to work internally with myself, and again, this is awesome that you brought it up, is just like, people aren't going to love you for like winning this and that, whatever. We need to teach our kids, like, you're good enough just the way you are. You're enough. You're valued just for being you. And yeah, again, thank you for saying that, because that really hits home for me.
Absolutely. I agree. Completely.
Yeah, it goes back to, I think, something that Matt and I talk about a bit in our clinical work as well, just this idea of goals versus values. And it wasn't about, you know, all these things that this kid did that made him special to his dad. It's just, you know, they value the relationship and they value that, what the line was in there, but that, you know, he's a good kid. He brings value just by being him. The more that we're able to see these sort of articles and people having these sort of conversations, the more it's going to normalize it. So it's an important article. I hope that we see more like that.
Yeah, a lot of powerful moments in that article when I was reading it. And I think one I just want to bring up is, too, is just like, even like you and your family could have like a healthy set of rules. How is society? How is your neighbors? How is your community going to look at when you see something like that, where of like the son is or the father's kissing his son on the cheek? Because just from my experience, if that were to like happen when I was growing up, I don't know if the parents would have said anything, but again, I definitely would have been bashed by my peers and my teammates, definitely for that.
I mean, I think when it comes to, you know, I'm not going to like teach my son that being a man is X or Y, that masculinity is X or Y. Like, I think actually there's nothing essential to being a man and nothing essential to being a woman beyond like our roles in genitalia and things like that. But I don't believe there's anything else essential. So the stuff, the conversations I'm having with him is more about, you might be experiencing these pressures as a boy or a man, and we need to be able to resist those, because you can do what you want to do based off of what your values and what you care about in life. And so you may get some pushback from some boys here, or you may see a movie here or listen to a podcast here that says this, mm-hmm. and you don't have to do that. You get to be you. We're going to move beyond gender. So kind of the messages that I want to like raise my son with and what I'm going to focus on.
And pointing out as a family, what do you value? And those values don't have to be gendered. We just for a time have said, these are the sort of characteristics that a female should embody. This is what we're going to praise her for. This is what a man should do. I mean, there was a line in that article that said, what if in fact real men do cry? I mean, something like that, right? Where over time we have said, this is what boys and girls do. But we're in a new space where not everything is boys and girls either, right? There is this wonderful continuum where these attributes can just be things that we value no matter your sex or your gender.
Excellent. Exactly.
Again, I just want to thank both of you for being on the show. I greatly appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Now, if any of my listeners, again, want to get a hold of either one of you, is there like a website or email that you use to message you?
So I would just go to www.matthewsizdek.com if individuals are interested in therapy, consulting, or coaching, or just have questions about the topics brought up today.
Good. And I am at ajrcoconsulting.com. You can reach out to me there and find out more about what I do. And I hope you do reach out. It'd be great to have a conversation.
Amen. Thank you so much, both of you.
Thank you. And thanks for having both of us on here together.
I again want to thank Ashley and Matt for being amazing special guests on my show. I had a tremendous time and I learned so much from them. I just want to thank all of my listeners for your support. And just to inform everyone that the information expressed in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issues, please seek the care of a medical doctor or a licensed mental health therapist. And if anyone has any further questions for me, you can reach me at my email address, behaviorhealthintegration121@gmail.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn at Jacob Minig, where you will find more educational posts on psychotherapy, trauma, and addiction. And finally, you can follow me on my website, which is behaviorhealthintegration.org. I also want to inform everyone that there is a great new device out there called Comigo. It's a breathing device meant to control and manage your breathing rates and the depth of your breathing as you inhale and exhale to, again, help relieve any type of anxiety and stress-like symptoms. And if you do put the BHI podcast into the promo code, you get $30 off this amazing device. It is a once-in-a-lifetime deal, and you will not be disappointed. All right, everyone, until next time, have a good day. Bye.